Good. So I'm Fran Berman, co-chair of BERDI, and also involved in the, now we'll call it the Research Data Alliance for now. And I want to call up our panel, Phil Bourne, Kelvin Drogemeyer, and Peter will be with us over the airwaves. So let's do that. Oh, sorry, I'll get down. Okay. And while these guys are coming up, let me talk a little bit about the charge that we asked this panel to do. As the Research Data Alliance / Data Web Forum working title has emerged, there's a tremendous amount of excitement and questions and all kinds of conversation all over the community. And what we thought that BERDI could do was help provide useful input. So as Alan said, don't think about the Data Web Forum necessarily as something that replaces things that are working and things that are really tremendously effective for their communities. Really think about it as an organization that facilitates work in communities that need a little push in order to get something tangible that will really help make progress. So the charge for our panelists were put an entrepreneurial hat on and think about things for which one really needs a broader community to make progress. You can't do it in your research group alone. You can't do it by yourself alone. You really need a broader group of people and a broad group of people really across boundaries. Think about something that you can think of as harvestable. So something that you can make real progress on, say, in the 12 to 18 month time frame. This isn't a problem that you need to think about for, a decade or really have, a very different kind of format. We have other options in the community to think about those kinds of problems. So you want it to be harvestable. You want it to involve a community. It should be something that benefits some group of people in our community through sharing, through discoverability of data, through better data analytics, through better best practices, through better harmonization or standards, those kinds of things. And at the end of it, there should be something that the working group has done that can be put into action, and some group of people who will implement or put into action that set of things, whether it be a policy that everybody goes home and then adopts, whether it be a certain kind of API that people then build tools to, whether it be a certain kind of standard that people then adopt. And then there'll be some sort of process, and as the group is kind of forming it, everyone is really looking for feedback into how can we find those nuggets that would be very helpful for the community to really make some things happen. And they happen alongside all the other things that are happening, and they happen alongside all of the longer-term discussions people are having. But this is something for which all of us as the data community, it's time for us to provide a venue, one of many, where we can come together as a community and make some things happen in addition to the other things that are happening. So we asked our panelists to think about it from their point of view, and I'm eager to hear their thoughts. I'll ask you guys to introduce yourself and to talk for about 15 minutes, and then we'll get some questions.
So hello, afternoon, everyone. My name is Phil Bourne. Excuse me. I'm from the University of California, San Diego. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Innovation at UCSD. I'm also a professor in pharmacology. So I'm going to try and address what Fran and Cliff asked us to address, and this was kind of the question, and Fran's outlined it already. So I won't sort of say any more about that. Let me just hop right into it. But I think to do that, you have to understand from my perspective what's wrong already. If everything was right, we don't need this. Well, from my perspective as a bioscientist, a biomedical scientist, I think there's good news and there's some bad news. So I think what we have, what's happened in the biosciences over the last 20, 30 years or so, has been absolutely remarkable with respect to the data that we have access to and tools associated with that data, driven in part, of course, in large part by the National Library of Medicine and the National Center for Biotechnology Information. It's just an outstanding resource. However, it is only one fraction of what we need to be able to access as life scientists today to make advances. I'm of the firm belief that the future of healthcare and biomedical sciences has a lot to do with data integration across scales. And that's where we're really kind of stuck right now, because we have, for the most part, silos of information in different areas, and different, if you like, biological scales. So that's where we are. The funding, and I'll give you a specific example in this right now, is almost, which it is just really does not help in many regards, because funding is almost always on national boundaries. But the work, the science that goes on is almost always international. And when you try and put the two together, you get into some problems. And I'll give you an example of that specifically. And any efforts to overcome that kind of issue, like what we just heard from Alan, would to me be very important. Data discovery is an increasing problem. I mean, there's just no question about that. It's not just about, it's not just about the quantity of data and what you're trying to discover from. It's also about the complexity of that data, which is increasing dramatically as well. And the tools to extract knowledge from that data, I'd say, are lacking. And I'll give you a specific example of what might be done in that regard. I realize that some of these are probably not really short-term problems, but if we can make a start, it would be really good. I think another aspect that's not on there, I just thought about it a few minutes ago, was the notion, if I say to people, how are you going to make this persistent? What's your business model? And those people will say to me, my business model is to get more money from the federal government to do this. I don't think that's a business model, okay? So how we interact with the private sector, in my new hat of I'm trying to drive innovation at UCSD, I've been thinking about this a lot. And, you know, we really have to do some things in that regard. There's no question that data is going to become more open. Tools to operate on that data are going to become more open. But what's lacking is the services that work with that. And that's where I think there are lots of new business models that can be developed. You only have to look at what's happening in the newspaper, the music, and the book world to realize that people are already starting to take advantage of this, of leveraging that open content with new business models. So I think there is opportunity there. So in some ways, when I read the document that Alan and Chris had put together, I sort of somehow interpreted it as a United Nations for data. So how do we achieve such a thing? I have three suggestions. Here's my first one. I think there's been a whole bunch of bottom-up approaches we've just heard a dialogue about such approaches, in a sense, versus a top-down approach. And I think the two need to synergize and work together. And in fact, the bottom-up approach is really give examples of test beds for, and hopefully testaments for what could be done on a larger scale. So I'm going to give you an example of one of those, which I'm personally associated with, which is a grassroots effort. And it's called the World WWPDB, the Worldwide Protein Data Bank. And so without getting to, if you know about the Protein Data Bank, that's fine. If you don't, it doesn't matter. There's people in the room I haven't seen for a long time who know a lot about the Protein Data Bank. The Worldwide Protein Data Bank is made up of the RCSB, which is in the US, and which Helen Berman directs and I co-direct. And then there's PDBE, which is led by Gerard Clawick. There's PDBJ, which is headed by Haruki Nakamura, and so that's in Japan, Europe, and then BMRB, which is led by John Markey, which is also here in the US. So it spans three continents. The bottom line is that this is a worldwide resource that's used by over 350,000 users per month. There's probably not a drug that's been discovered in the last 20 years or so that in some way has not used this resource. Right. But the issue is that it would not survive today if it was not for the goodwill of these respective institutions who are working with it. They have to work together to make it work, because not any one of the groups, of these four groups, could do it all on their own. So they're all dependent on each other. They're all in different parts of the world. And that's good from a scientific point of view. It's bad from a perspective that if any one of these went offline, the resource would be in serious trouble. And right now, they're funded completely separately. There's an acknowledgement by the various funding agencies that this is true, but there's been no effort really to address this in a way that globalizes it. So the data is global, the funding is national, and that's a dangerous precedent. But it's achieved some interesting things. So it found, because there was no integrated international funding available for this, they essentially went out and formed a 501c3, and so they've been raising money in the private sector. They haven't really pushed on this very much right now, but it's enabled certain things. So, example, a symposium to celebrate the 40 years of this resource. It's one of the oldest resources in biology. They've collectively together defined global standards for the data. They do it together. They write software together to actually process this data. And they form task forces of international scientists worldwide to resolve issues associated with the data as, for example, that data becomes more complex over time. So all of this is, you know, really good. And it's also interesting that at some level we all compete as well. So we take the same data source and we actually present it to the community in different ways and offer different services in a way that effectively competes with each other at the same time. So it's an interesting model I think could really be facilitated even more. I think it can be learnt from, but it could also be facilitated by the kinds of activities that Alan's been talking about. All right, what's the second suggestion is just some things that appear to me fairly obvious that could actually have, I think, a significant impact fairly quickly. So in our field, in the biosciences, there are certain elements of data that are characterized fairly well. But here they are buried in all these different silos. So, for example, gene names. So if you Google a gene name, you're not going to find, and which, by the way, is the most likely way of getting the majority of information about that gene, but you're only going to get a small fraction of it. Because those resources, like Google and Bing, whatever, they're basically shallow and broad. They're not deep. They're not doing deep search on the data. We need to be able to pull out things and put them together. So the idea of extracting a gene name and a piece of metadata that leads you back to the resource and says something about that resource and bringing it all together in a registry would be something that would, I think, could be done relatively straightforwardly and would make a big difference. And I believe all the data resources would comply with it. Why would they comply with it? Because the federal agencies giving the money would tell them to comply with it. That may be, or they would want to be part of it because it's actually recognition for their resource. If people start going to the broker then to get to their resources, which is what they get credit for, they need to be in the broker. So it's something that, and then of course you can also then add the idea of social networking on top of it so people can actually comment and you can see who's using it and how they're using that particular source of data. It would, in my opinion, go some way towards this issue of defining what data sources should be preserved and not preserved. In part, it has to do with usage. Not completely, but in part. So that's a second suggestion. A third one has to be this. I mean, the notion of the software supporting this kind of device is just actually revolutionized things. But it hasn't revolutionized the way we do scientific software development. If you think about replacing this with a data source and then say, okay, let's have apps that work on that data source, and you do it in the same way. You can build business models out of this sort of thing, but you also get recognition. So what we have, the situation we have right now, I'd say, in the biosciences with respect to software development is this, yes, it is a thousand flowers bloom. And that's good, but the problem is that 992 of those flowers die. And quite a lot of money has been spent doing it. So the trick is, how do you preserve the intellectual flourishment but not spend so much money doing it? And an app model is, you know, one example of how this could be put forward. you essentially register apps against the data source. They run against the data source. They're measured against that data source. People comment on their usage, and how much they use reflects how good they are. And essentially, things can rise and fall by their own merits. And in the spirit of apps, you have interfaces that allow you to do things in ways that just frankly, with most of the software you download these days, is just, you know, nigh on impossible. It would be, in my opinion, a huge efficiency gain. So those are just sort of three ideas. I think that's all I have to say. Yep. Associated with my own particular domain and how it could interface with this initiative.